You know, it really was that kind of year. When the untoward and the unexpected was always happening, and we kept saying to ourselves, it could have been worse. But somehow God gives us enough light and enlightenment to continue worship. And God is good to Israel. It was Edmund Burke, the English essayist, philosopher, who observed some two centuries ago that man is by constitution a religious animal. And all of our research in the intervening decades has only proven him to be correct. And the reason for this, I believe, is best expressed in a short phrase in the biblical book of Proverbs. Tochelet memushacha machalalev. Without hope, the heart withers. When there is hope, we are given the psychic energy to reach up and to reach out. We are encouraged to develop our talents, to think new thoughts, to break new ground, to undertake new experiences, to open ourselves in love, to care and to be cared for. We dare to commit ourselves, to give ourselves over. When we lose hope, the soul sickens and withers. We turn away from friends and family, we turn away from others, and we turn in on ourselves. We're afraid to try. Lassitude and melancholy become the predominant features of our lives and our feelings. We sink into the slough of despond, and our whole life is diminished. Man is, by nature, a hoping animal. But when men hope, these hopes are often blasted and shattered. Life is brief, and often life is bruising. Often we give ourselves to another in love and are disappointed or spurned. Sometimes we achieve what we longed for, and the achievement turns to ashes in our mouth. Men needed a more substantial hope than their dreams. And faith, religion provides that hope. Religion assures man that there is reason to do the right, that civilization is not built on quicksand, that to care and to be caring is to be virtuous and wise, that to commit ourselves to important and good causes is to commit our energies to meaningful and lasting undertakings, that there is a larger purpose which transcends the disappointments of the moment. And so even when we are frustrated or when we feel defeated, there is reason to carry on. And when you examine the certification of hope, which faith, religion provide, an interesting fact emerges. And that is that for the most part, religions have not certified hope this year or next year, today or tomorrow. The fulfillment of our dreams. Religions have not said that you can expect your hopes to come true, things you hope about your private life. Rather, what the religions have done is to certify only the long hope. So the Eastern religions have said there can be peace of mind, the soul can be calmed, but only after a long process of preparation, a difficult process of self-discipline in which you have mastered your appetites and your passions and your ambitions and learned not to care. And the classic Western religions have said, yes, there are hopes that do come true, but in the next world, not necessarily in this one. In heaven, you can have your heart's desire, but life is a via dolorosa, a way of tears, a time of testing to see whether or not you merit the right to pass through the gates of heaven. And those popular modern religions, the materialist ideologies, Marxism and Maoism, promise man that their hopes will come true, that there will be a time when there will be economic freedom and justice, where there will be international peace. But only when the dialectic of history has been completed, the class wars are over. Only in the future, and until then, man must commit himself to the state and sacrifice for the cause and for history. Judaism too, as you well know, has certified the long hope. We have the vision of the Messiah. We've had the vision of the resurrection of the dead. We've had the vision of heaven. But interestingly, in our tradition, there has also been a willingness to say to us, by the tradition, that there are reasons, that there is good reason to look for the kind moments, the happy times, the fulfillment of your dreams. Don't despair. Don't assume that all hopes are deferred. Eat your bread with joy. Drink your wine with a merry heart. There is nothing better for man than that he should enjoy the labor that he performs. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth. My beloved is mine, and I am my beloved. Now, of course, there was good reason that the religions of the world have tended to certify only the long hope. If they had said to us, dream and your dreams will come true, we would have dreamed, and so many of our dreams would not have come true, and we would have lost all hope. We would have said life is pointless, hapless, and we would have given up, sunk into melancholy and lassitude. But because they certified the long hope, we had always reason to persevere. And so religions were performing their essential function, which is redemptive, which is to say to us, whatever the challenge, whatever the difficulty, whatever the darkness, persevere. There is reason to carry on. There is reason to continue to be open to life. What gave Judaism then the courage to speak as it spoke? To say to us, dream and some of your dreams will come true. Hope and some of your hopes will be fulfilled. Don't be afraid. Seize the moment. You know, when you look at the New Year's rituals of the ancient peoples, you find that most of them began the New Year with some complicated rite of purgation by which they tried to diminish the power of the evil spirits, of the wicked gods over the days that lay ahead. And I've often puzzled over the way in which we celebrate the beginning of the secular year. We seem somehow to crowd all of the sense, all of what we assume will give us joy into a few hours on December 31st, as if we were saying we can't count on joy, on fulfillment in the weeks and months that lie ahead in the new year. But tonight, as we sat around our dinner tables, we shared an apple and we dipped it into honey. And our tradition encouraged us to wish one another a Shana Tova Umetuka, a good year, a sweet year, a year full of pleasure and blessing, joy. And when we greeted one another tonight, what did we say? Shana Tova May the new year be a happy, healthy, joyous one for you. And our worship tonight was filled with words of anticipation. Hadesha leinu shana tova. Lord our God, let the new year be full of promise for us. What gave Judaism the courage to turn to us and say, have hope. There are joys that do come true. You have the wisdom, you have the will which will allow you to hope and at times to be frustrated and yet to remain open to life and to carry on. And the answer, I think, lies primarily in the great respect our tradition shows for our wisdom, our potential wisdom, and our will. Where there is judgment, man can shape and master the natural tendencies and instincts of life. Our religion did not tell us what to do, but encouraged us to think and to feel and to care. It trusted us. It trusted us to know that we were not children, that we did not have to have every toy we saw in the window, every bit of candy in the box. It encouraged us to know that life was full of challenge, unremitting, continuing challenge, that there would be disappointments. And yet it encouraged us to look to the moment and find and seize the joy within it, to bless each object that we touched, because it was a potential source of happiness and blessing to us. It encouraged us to look at the new year with some confidence, to anticipate its promise. Chadesh aleinu shana tova. And I'd like to, on this New Year's, give you an image which is found in the book of the prophet Isaiah, which allows us to think about this concept of hope, this natural tendency of which we all share to be buoyant and expecting. It's an image which is used into another purpose, but essentially it's this. Night has fallen. The scene is a Judean village. One lonely citizen is abroad in the street. He's been working at some task, and he has no sense of how much of the night stretches before him. This is biblical Israel. There were no watches. There was no clock. There were no clocks. And so he calls up to the watchman on the gate of the city, who can see far out into the distance, further than he can see, Shomer ma milayla. Shomer ma milel, watchman, what of the night? Watchman, what of the night? And the watchman turns to the east and he scans the horizon to see if there is any sign of the dawn. And he notices a slight lightening of the darkness. And he says, Atta boker, the dawn comes. And then he quickly adds, Vagam laila, but also another night. Now imagine yourself as that lonely Judean up late at night at some task. The night is, of course, not the physical darkness, but the darkness of your problems, of your anxieties, of your fears. But you're thinking about some straitened relationship. You're thinking about the problems of livelihood, about loneliness or illness or grief. And like that citizen, you cannot see how much ahead of you the darkness stretches. And so you call up to one who can see further, to wisdom, to Judaism. You say, Shomer ma bilayla, wisdom, what of the night? Shomer ma milel. And wisdom, experience, calls back to you, Atta boker. There is a lightning in the distance. The dawn comes. Do not despair. Just as day follows night, so night follows day in the natural order, so in the human order, in our own private lives, this too ultimately passes. If we have only the perseverance and the courage to be steady and to be constant. And there's a healing message here. Dawn comes. If we have the courage to persevere and to be hopeful, we do not turn in ourselves and turn away from life. I speak often in these ways to people who are in grief, hurt, who feel abandoned by someone whom they loved, who find that life is too much for them. And I speak to them of confidence, of the dawn, of hope, and of faith. That's the message of our tradition. And when I spoke recently to a good friend, a cultured man, whose life these last months had had something about it of the nature of Job's, he listened to me patiently, and he spoke to me gently. He spoke a quotation, which I later discovered was from the poet Wordsworth, which Wordsworth claimed to have read originally inscribed above a hermit's cave. It reads this way: "Hopes, what are they? Beads of mourning strung on slender blades of grass." My Job was saying to me, hopes are insubstantial. They're like the morning mist. Immediately the sun comes up, it dissipates, it evaporates. I can hope, but hope will not bring back one whom I have loved, who was killed in an accident. Hope will not pull me back into life in the way in which I once was. For I have an illness which has been diagnosed, and it's a dangerous one. Hopes are ephemeral and evanescent. And I agreed with him, of course they are. But the morning mist refreshes the earth and it freshens the air. If it were not for the morning dew, the earth would dry up and the leaf would wither. The morning mist begins the day, hopefully, just as hope begins our effort and allows us to try, to dare, to continue. We need to hope. But it is not easy. For again, remember the image. We're abroad, under the shadows, in the darkness. And we cannot see the dawn. Our tradition can speak to us of hope, but we cannot see any practical, any reasonable, any feasible way to resolve whatever our problem may be. Shall we listen to wisdom, to the watchman who says to us, Ata Boker, the dawn comes? We should. How often in our lives have there been just such moments? Moments of despair. Moments when we looked hopelessly around. We moved in 1,000 directions because we didn't know in what direction to go. There seemed no plan which was feasible. No program which was reasonable, and yet somehow we took each day at its time, and one day the dawn was there. One day we found we could walk out again into the world. One day we found our energies were again gainfully employed. One day we found that we enjoyed and were loved and were caring for another. And what is true of us in our private lives is true of us in our collective lives. This year has not been a gracious year for our country or for our world. The key word is recession, which means things have gotten worse. Things are moving downhill, and no one can see how far. There is less prosperity and there is more unemployment. And the whole foundation, the financial foundation of our world seems to be shaky. And there are many in our country, especially among the least fortunate, and many among the least fortunate countries of the world who not simply had to tighten their belts, but who've had nothing to put into their stomachs and who have lost really all hope for the immediate future. And when we look about for some program, some wisdom, some advice that economists or financial people or politicians or statesmen can give us, there is none. Economics doesn't work. Marxian ideologies do not work. Shomer Mami Laila. How long before us stretches the night? Is there any end? And of course we know that there is. But there is a cycle to the economic order, as there is a cycle to our personal lives, as there is a cycle to nature, that if we're not given to despair, if we don't throw up our hands and surrender, but roll up our sleeves and use our God-given intelligence and initiative and concern, take each day as it can, do what it is our power to do, ultimately, the dawn will come. The future belongs to those who hope. But of course, that's too simple. The watchman, wisdom, spoke another phrase. Dawn comes. Don't despair. But the night also will soon follow. Don't delude yourself that once the dawn comes, the day will last forever and it will be forever cloudless. Life continues, and to live is to be challenged. We solve one problem, we resolve one situation, only to find ourselves facing other problems and other difficult situations. There's something of the child in every one of us. When we were children, we were convinced, if we were five, that when we got to school, all our problems would be over. And when we were about 10 or 11, we were convinced that only if our parents would allow us to stay up late at night, then the skies were blue. And at 15, we could only be given the keys to the car. The future was brilliant. And so we go through life in a certain way, convinced that only if we can graduate and get our professional license, if only we can marry and establish a family, if only we can gain the respect of our peers, if only we can be elected to high office, if only we can gain financial security, if only we can leave the rat race and retire, at some point in life, some goal will resolve all the problems. Our children say, we will have made it. Now we ought to take great joys in these achievements. But at the same time, we must recognize that they are only way stations in the journey that we call life. And as we move along, we're going to have to suffer all the uncertainties and all the inconveniences and all the unexpected accidents of life. There is no place short of the grave where the problems disappear, where we live under everlasting sunshine. It's one thing, you know, to live for hope. It's quite another, quite dangerous, to live in our hopes. To assume that life is a fairy story, that our hopes are a reality, and that they will someday, in some magical way, come true. Those who seek this kind of magic often find that they put their trust in some magician, some piper who leads them to their own defeat and destruction. More than this, living in our dreams denies to us the pleasure of finding in life, with all of its problems, the joys that are there, because we seek perfection. And there is no perfect moment. We seek completion, but we're only always on the way. And tonight, on this Rosh Hashanah, in this place, let me speak of another dream, a dream, a hope which we've all shared. And what it means to live for the dream, and the dangers if we try to live in the dream. For 2,000 years, our people dreamt of returning to Zion. And for the better part of 100 years, the best spirits of our people labored and sacrificed to make that return possible, to create a Jewish national home. Few believed it would happen. The night had lasted centuries and millennia. But happen it did. And when it happened, it seemed almost too good to be true. For not only was there a national home, but it seemed to have actualized so many of the values which we in our tradition hold dear. Not only had a blighted land been made green, but democracy had been brought to a part of the world which knew only arbitrary authority and tyranny. World-class institutions of learning and of culture and of research were quickly established. 3 million people were turned from refugees into citizens. Great experiments in communitarian living, social democracy, were attempted and realized. Our dream, our hope, had come to be. But there is no night that does not lead to day, and there is no day which is not ultimately cloud-filled and shadowed. And soon the very democracy of this new state led to problems. Its peculiar forms gave unwarranted power to the ultra-Orthodox. And soon the intransigence of those who would not admit that it had come into being led some in the state to live by a coat of arms, to develop a siege mentality. And soon the costs of maintaining defense had limited, constricted some of the high goals and hopes which its own citizens had developed. Ata bokeh v'gam laila. The dawn comes, but also the clouds, the night. Now for those who were wise, who knew that we cannot live in our hopes, there was really nothing that unexpected in what happened. They knew that there would be political mistakes, no one is infallible, that too much might be given away at Camp David and there might not be enough give on the West Bank. They know that ultimately, under pressure, men would gamble, there would be times like Lebanon. But they also knew that this is the way of the world. Men are mortal and fallible, Jews included. That there is no state which is pure and pristine. And that when one takes any measure, any standard one wants to judge a state by, Israel stands well in the forefront of those who have lived by a code of decency and humane behavior. Israel, the Israelis, pay the highest taxes in the world. They've had to integrate the refugee, they've had to provide for their defense. And I find it fascinating that the social welfare safety net in Israel has no holes in it. The Israelis have had to go to war time and again, interrupt their studies, interrupt their research. But when you factor in the size of the population, there is no country on earth which has such a brilliant record of academic and medical and technological research achievement. And when you remember that Israel has suffered a permanent state of siege, of war, it's amazing, is it not, that it is still an open society. The democratic institutions have been maintained where in country after country across the face of the world, democracy has given way to what is called guided authority. Now, there's no morality really in war. But I put to you that there is quite a difference between showering down leaflets on a civilian population, telling them to leave before an attack comes, and losing the value of surprise, and the firebombing of Hanoi and the defoliation of Vietnam, indiscriminate, and the indiscriminate use of poison gas in Afghanistan. For those who live for the dream and not in the dream, Israel remains an achievement of immense proportions, a state which is seen to be committed to the finest of human values, fallible, prone to mistakes, certainly, but nevertheless one which has tried its best it can, given the tenuous, difficult situation in which she has constantly found herself, a state which has a record of which we can all be proud. But for those who live in the dream, there's been disappointment. They were not prepared for reality. They wanted a pure society. They wanted infallible leadership. They wanted somehow for Israel to live as if she did not live in an international society which is a jungle, as if her men and women did not have to bear arms simply to protect their homes, as if Israel could not be given to moments of irascibility and anger, but must conduct herself as if it was a society of saints. When we live in our dreams, reality always disappoints us. And those who cannot leave the dream begin bitterly and uncritically and unwisely and unfairly to condemn a society whose virtues they no longer see, whose circumstances they no longer consider. For they're living in a world which does not exist. A messianic world before the Messiah has come. The wisdom of our people, the message of this night, to us in the context of our private lives, to us in the context of our belonging to this people Israel, to us in the context of citizens of this city and of this country and of the world. In each of these contexts, our tradition says to us, Ata Boker, there's reason to hope. There are moments of fulfillment. Dare, care, open yourself to life. Sense the promise of the new year. Gam Laila, never forget that the night also comes, that there is no moment of final release, that life is full of challenges, Let not your expectations be so vaunting that you lose your sense of your bearings. And let not your dreams be so imprisoning that they become the real world and you forget the world that is, the world that we share, the world which truly can give you joy and fulfillment if you will only take advantage of the life and the talents and the opportunity which God has given you. We only take advantage of the promise of the new year. Shana Tova Tikatevu. May you truly find in the new year the goodness which is there. Amen.